This is Speaking of Writers. I'm Steve Richards. The book is Clean Sweep, the 8th Fighter Command Against the Luftwaffe, 1942 to 1945. The author is Thomas McKelvey Cleaver, a vivid narrative history that draws on firsthand accounts to chronicle the U.S. 8th Air Force's Fighter Command from its foundation in 1942 through to its victory in the skies over Nazi Germany. Between August 19, 1942, and the end of operations over Germany on May 5, 1945, the 15 fighter groups fielded by that command destroyed 9,000 enemy aircraft in the air and on the ground. The 8th Air Force suffered more casualties, killed and wounded, than the entire U.S. Marine Corps did between the invasion of Guadalcanal and the capture of Okinawa in June of 1945. This story of the creation, development, and operation provides riveting firsthand accounts of the 8th Air Force Fighter Command that protected the B-17s and B-24s in the skies over occupied Europe. Tom Cleaver has been a published writer for the past 45 years, with his latest works being the best-selling titles Under the Southern Cross in 2021, The Tonkin Golf Yacht Club in 2021, Going Downtown in 2022, and most recently, alongside the late Eric Hemmel, The Cactus Air Force last year. During his 30 years as a screenwriter in Hollywood, he wrote the cult classic The Terror Within and worked as a supervising producer on a number of TV and cable series. Happy to have Tom Cleaver join me now here on Speaking of Writers. Tom, welcome to this program.
Hi. Hello.
What led you to Clean Sweep?
It's something that's always interested me, as I noted in the foreword. I kind of grew up in the middle of the 8th Air Force. I didn't realize it, but in the years after World War II, there were a lot of 8th Air Force people around me. I actually studied piano with Bert Stiles' mother, and I knew that because my mother had known Bert Stiles before the war. He and I are, the only writers that ever graduated from South High School in Denver. Starting in about 1970, I had the opportunity to meet a lot of these guys. I became friends with Steve Pizzanos in 1980 until he died in 2016. He was a real character. As Walter Cronkite said, he was the most interesting guy Cronkite met in the entire World War II. And I met a lot of the other ones and managed to get their stories while they were still around, because the only one that's left now is Bud Anderson, and he's 101 years old now. And I just always wanted to write about it, so I finally did.
Tom, yeah, I want to talk about these first-hand accounts, numerous first-hand accounts, as you mentioned some there. You met pilots such as the legendary Hub Zemke, Don Blakeslee, Chuck Yeager, as well as also interviewing leading Luftwaffe pilots, including Adolf Galland, Gunther Rahl, and Walter Count Punsky Krupinski. What were they like, the Luftwaffe pilots?
They were, it was very interesting. I met Rahl at the American Fighter Aces Convention in 1984, and I was at the bar talking to Robert L. Scott, and Rahl showed up next to me, and if you didn't know who he was by looking at his name tag, you would never think he was who he was. Most American aces, you can tell they're fighter pilots. Even they could be in their underwear and you'd know they were fighter pilots. Mm. And if they were generals, you'd definitely know they were generals even in their underwear. And Rahl, who had just retired that year as the head of the West German Luftwaffe, was just some hail fellow well met there at the bar, but a very interesting guy. Given their experiences, I thought that he and Krupinski and Galland were more thoughtful about their experiences than the Americans, but they had a lot of reason to put a lot of thought into it. So,
yeah, and what else stood out about these fighter pilots on both sides to you?
Well, the interesting thing is they were all high achievers always. There was a study made about fighter pilots shooting down the enemy, and only 10% of all fighter pilots ever shot down an airplane. Only about 8% ever scored as an ace with five. And when you get to the ones over 10, you're off the scale. And so, yeah, I mean, you get somebody like Eric Hartman with 352. He just doesn't even register. But the interesting thing that I found is that every one of these people, if they stayed in the military, they ended up in the upper ranks of the military. If they went into civilian life, they ended up in the upper ranks of whatever it was they chose to do. And I think that, you know, that's the personality type that achieves it. I remember one guy saying that at the breakfast table, you could tell there were two different kinds of people there, and there was no in between. There were those who went out, who were going out to hunt, and those who secretly knew they were going out to be hunted.
We're chatting with Tom Cleaver here on Speaking of Writers. His new book is Clean Sweep, the 8th Fighter Command against the Luftwaffe, 1942 to 1945. Tom, August 7th, 1942, what were the two events of major military importance that took place?
Guadalcanal, the 1st Marine Division landed on Guadalcanal, and the 12 bombers of the 97th Bomb Group attempted to bomb France. It was the first mission. They eventually ended up making a successful mission 10 days later. It was the first time they realized that their biggest threat was English weather. As one guy said, the weather was a definite German ally.
I mentioned in the introduction, the 15 fighter groups fielded by that command destroyed 9,000 enemy aircraft in the air and on the ground. This 8th Air Force, how did it come to be?
It came to be before the war, when the American Joint Chiefs were talking to the British Joint Chiefs, and we knew that we were eventually going to get in the war. The Americans knew that they wanted to field a strategic air force in England. At the time, at the time of Pearl Harbor, there was not very much air force. There were 120 B-17s. There were 35 B-24s, and of the B-17s, there were only 40 of them that were B-17Es that they could actually use in combat. There were 60 P-38s, of which 15 were the P-38E that was fit for combat. The P-47 had flown as a prototype the previous summer, and the airplane was about to enter production in January of 42, and the P-51 was two examples of the British Mustang One sitting in a back hangar at Wright Dayton Field at the Air Force Test Center, and they'd been there for 4 months and nobody had flown them because they weren't invented here. They were invented here, but they were not used here. They'd been made for the British. The first time, by the summer of 42, they had enough P-38s that they could field a group, and with two more coming in that fall, and they had sent over two groups of B-17s. Interestingly enough, with the 31st Fighter Group, they were actually thinking of sending P-39 Aero Cobras, flying them across using a 310-gallon drop tank that was almost as big as the airplane, flying them to Greenland, to Iceland, to Scotland. The first time that an advanced test pilot took the thing up and actually got it off the ground, he found that the gas sloshed and he nearly went out of control. And they said, no, some 250-hour second lieutenant is not going to be able to do this.
We're chatting with Tom Cleaver here on Speaking of Writers. His new book is called Clean Sweep, the 8th Fighter Command against the Luftwaffe, 1942 to 1945. We talked earlier about the firsthand accounts that you got and the interviews you did. What else was part of your research for this book?
I had access to war diaries for the 4th Fighter Group and for the 357th, and past that, a lot of good research by people like Roger Freeman, the late Roger Freeman, who was probably the best researcher on the Air Force.
What would you like readers to take away from Clean Sweep, Tom?
Just how difficult it was. If you go out nowadays and you see one of those bombers, my late wife, when we first met, I took her out, to see the Collins Foundation B-17 and B-24 when they came for a visit. And in those days, there were still a lot of the veterans, so the airplanes were late getting there. And while we were waiting, she got to talking with a couple of the guys in B-17 crews. And when the airplanes arrived, they took her on a tour of the B-17. And she got out, and she came out of the back end of the airplane, and she said, "It's so small." And she walked away, turned back, and looked at the thing. She said, "I will never think of one of those things again the way I did before after talking to those guys." These airplanes, they were small, they were unheated. The waist windows were open. The outside air temperature was somewhere between 20 to 40 below at high altitude in the stratosphere. They were using oxygen masks that didn't actually give them enough oxygen. Nowadays, when you go flying in the Air Force, I've gone with them for some missions for articles I've written. If they're going to fly over 20,000 feet, they have it's got a pressurized oxygen system, and for you to go take that ride, you have to go through their high altitude chamber to learn the symptoms of hypoxia. But these guys were using a demand circulators, and above 20,000 feet, they were getting somewhere between 75 to maybe 80% of the oxygen they should normally get, and they were having to fight on that. And both sides were in a similar situation. Steve Pisano said that when he stayed in the Air Force after the war and they changed the oxygen systems, he thought back to his time in the war, and he said, "I don't know how we ever did it."
How they did it. An incredible story. The book is Clean Sweep, the U.S. 8th Air Force Fighter Command Against the Luftwaffe, 1942 to 1945. The new book out by Thomas McKelvey Cleaver. Tom, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And this is Speaking of Writers.